So, did any of you make a resolution in the year 2023 that you should listen to more podcasts by old dudes? Because if you did, here we are to help you fulfill that wish. It's Sons of the Double Cheeseburger. I'm Brandon.
I'm Kevin.
And we're back at you. It's a new year, but it's the same old guys.
It's true.
Yeah.
That's okay.
So Kevin, you were, just before we started recording, I was talking about how I'm completely fried from 2 weeks of my son's school vacation.
Yes.
I'm embarrassed to admit that. I was doing really, really well at the start, and then it ended badly. And you asked, is he just getting antsy? And that's where I wanted to jump in and not tell you the real answer is no, he wasn't getting antsy. He was getting wildly obsessed with the hottest children's PC game of 1997, More Bugs in Boxes.
I never even heard of this.
Not antsy, but buggy. Right.
Oh, that's good. That was good.
Yeah, that's why.
Nice play on words there.
That's why I needed to do that. So, yeah, More Bugs in Boxes was a counting game for small children at the time that you and I were already in our late 20s, and so we perhaps were not as tuned into that. And my son was 6 years from existing, so he was also not tuned into that. But now he is. But there is one little problem. I don't have a computer that runs Windows 95, 98, ME, anything from that era, which is what you actually need.
Can you just use an emulator or something?
Well, apparently you can. So there's a couple of tricks here. Apparently there are tricks to put on your computer, and I'm bad enough at this stuff that I'm going to just say them, and people who know these things are just going to laugh and laugh. This will be the funniest part of the podcast for somebody. Where apparently I can create a virtual machine, and I can then run the game through there, or if I'm lucky, I can run compatibility settings and it'll work. So far, I am not lucky. So that has not happened. And as you can tell from my detailed description of creating a virtual machine, I am not prepared to do that yet.
I understand.
I have not learned enough.
When I said, with great confidence, can't you just use like an emulator or something? Yeah. That was much like an old person saying, so how are you doing with those NFTs or
that's exactly,
you know, right. Where are you on the, where's your book of faces?
Right. So, well, here's the funny thing though. There is actually what they call an emulator. So somebody has some enterprising nerd has, created a website where you can go, you can click on that game, and it'll bring up that game within their website.
Mm-hmm.
And you can play the whole game. This is not good enough for Zach.
How because is that Zach, not good enough for... I'm sorry.
Zach has the CD-ROM in hand. He has a CD-ROM.
It has to be... Where did he get the CD-ROM?
He bought it through eBay. And let me just say this. You can...
That's your fault.
You can... No, it's not my fault.
Yes, it is.
You can hate Elon Musk all you want. You can say Twitter's a cesspool. You can say Facebook is garbage. You can say... I will say to you, the most horrible website in the world is eBay. I use it, but it's horrible. Because it keeps offering my son things that he doesn't need, that don't work right, that... But he loves the past. It's not my fault because I am firmly committed to giving Zachary choice. So he is a 19-year-old. He's got his own money. He's got his own decisions he can make. And he's like, I want to play this game. And I'm like, well, you made a choice. Now, what I didn't know is he wanted to play a game that was not compatible. If I knew it was not compatible, then I could say, You can't play that game on our computers, dude. But once we have the game, now we are fixated on, we have to make it work. And so I found the emulator. I'm like, look, you can play it online. And he says online when I say that with the most disgust and disdain you could possibly imagine. You can play it online. Online. And then he waves the CD in my face again, right? I've even tried, because I'm a jerk, taking the CD and just being like, okay, let's do it. We'll play it with the CD. Here, I'm putting the CD in your CD-ROM drive. Whoop, the CD-ROM drive closes. Oh, let's open this up. And I open up the emulator. And I'm just like, oop, there it is. There it is. He's not fooled. He's too smart for that. He's like, online. So, yeah. So, I told him, I said, I don't have the mental energy while we're doing all of vacation to figure out how to install a virtual machine. Whatever that means. By the way, if you're a listener and you know how to install a virtual machine, you need to reach out to me. Stop listening now. You can come back to the rest of the podcast some other time. Stop listening now. Check in with me and see if I have figured this out yet. Because here's a tip. I haven't. So I need your help.
So this is the cry for help portion of the podcast. I didn't see that. I didn't see that on the agenda.
I didn't put that on the rundown, cry for help. But yeah, no. I mean, let's be honest. In some ways, this whole podcast is a cry for help, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
That's, yeah.
My very existence.
This is just a specific layer of the cry for help today. So, yeah, that's what we have. It's exhausting me so much. He just relentlessly couldn't get it off his mind. And, yeah. And so much so that he only slept like 3 hours last night.
Oh, no.
That's yeah, he was good. Up at 3 o'clock in the morning talking to me about more bugs in boxes. And I'm going to tell you, I did not want to talk more bugs in boxes at 3 o'clock in the morning. It is taking everything I can, right? All of my powers, all of my sanctification right now to not flower this whole conversation with more F-bombs than I know how to bleep out when I go to do the editing later. Anyway.
All right. Yeah. Well, I am sorry.
That's how my New Year has started out. It's pretty good.
who designed that game?
Oh, gee, I have now forgotten. I don't have it in front of me because this is another great part. This is so beautiful. I told him I'm going to work on this today, and I think he's already pissed off at me because I haven't fixed it over the last 2 weeks, that he hid the game. I think he thinks, like, I'm going to wreck it or something. Like, my secret plan is to just destroy the game and make it go away, which...
Was that your secret plan?
If I thought it would work, it would have been my secret plan. But you know what? He's already found that there are more copies on eBay. And he knows that, I mean, if he thinks this thing through, yeah, I could destroy that copy, and then he'll just talk to me about another one on eBay until I go insane or I let him buy it. So, no, that was not my plan. But I think he's in the phase of punishing me now. So he hid it. And I can't find it. He's got like 100 CDs because he's started collecting CDs. He likes to listen to a lot of different music. And yeah, he's got it hidden within his 100 CDs. And so I'm like scouring through his CDs trying to find it. So, good times. Yeah. So now I don't know who made, let's see, I'm opening it up right here. No. I don't know who. Probably Scholastic Books or something. Some monsters like that. All right. Well, hey, how about the, how are you doing?
I'm doing, I don't know how I'm doing.
You're still on break, so that's good.
Wait, yeah, you have one more day. Is it more bugs in boxes or bugs in boxes?
Oh, we got both of them.
Sweet.
We have both games. So, but if I can figure out how to make one of them work, I'll be able to make both of them work. For whatever reason, more bugs in boxes is the one he's more excited about. Because I think he's assuming it's more.
It's Simon and Schuster that made it. So give them a call.
Yeah.
See if they still have any support for it.
It's very funny.
There's also how many bugs in a box?
Oh, yeah, that's the first one. How many bugs in a box? We have that, and we have more bugs in boxes.
Got it. Yeah, right here I'm looking at the emulator, and that's not good enough.
We've played it. I sit in his room with him, and I'm like, look,
screw
dude,
the emulator.
We're playing the game. Look, here it is. And he's just like, online.
Is that what he was talking about in yesterday's
it was.
Portola Cat and Cloudcast, and you're like, we'll talk about that later.
It is what we've been talking about everywhere, all the time. So, yes.
he said hello, and then he wanted to talk about bugs and boxes.
Yeah.
And you said, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. And which apparently meant, he was like, we'll talk about that later. Check. I'll set my alarm for 3 a.m. Listen, it was occurring to me earlier today that the exhaustion of like the New Year's weekend is really different after you're old and married and you have kids.
It hits different, as they say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It does. No, I don't like anything anymore. I'm just, it all wears me out. It's all too much. What is the point of all this? What are we even doing?
Well, that was 2022, everybody.
We're on a crash course of the mass extinction event, and sadly, I'm not a part of that.
Yeah. You got FOMO about that?
I do. Why can't I be extinct? These tears are going to turn into sad
mass
tears.
Extinction event FOMO. That's a thing. That's going to be the thing for 2023. All right.
So, my break, you know, it's 2 weeks can go by with seemingly then nothing to show for it.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
true. I don't know. It was just, went to the Indiana-Kentucky border region for a few days.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
You put out a lot of nice pictures. Honestly, like following what you were doing through the socials.
That was just part of the trip back. Yeah. I have
all
picture.
The stuff that while you were there was all secret. You didn't share any of that.
Correct.
Nice.
Not for your eyes. All right.
Yeah. Exclusive.
And I have because I posted that picture of the world's fastest pop machine.
Yeah.
In Lerna, Illinois.
Dude, that was such a weird picture. You need to put that on our Insta or something. Let people see that, because
yeah, unfortunately, my phone camera doesn't do night pictures very well.
Yeah.
When everything is dark and then there's one bit of bright light,
uh-huh.
Which is what that was.
That's why I asked you the question if you were in a Stephen King novel right now, because that's what it looked like.
I'll tell you,
a still from like Christine or something.
This whole experience was odd because. One, we were going to see the world's fastest pop machine.
Yeah.
Which is just a...
Is it just, is like it fast in the way, anything. Like, is it, but, does it dispense the soda faster?
So I said, oh, you know what, we're going to be near the world's fastest pop machine. Eileen actually, right away, looked it up on her phone, said, oh, it's only about 15 minutes.
Kevin, I just lost
detour. Let's go. And I was like, what? I was not expecting that, right?
So we had some audio difficulties, and so we're back. Kevin is going to tell us about his trip to the world's fastest pop machine.
Yes, the world's fastest pop machine in Lerna, Illinois. So, so here's what happened. I often will, when we're on a trip or even we're sitting around the house, I'll say, hey, we should do this thing. We should see this place, try this experience, whatever. And I usually just get no response whatsoever from my family, right?
Yeah. Like, they don't have any idea what that's like.
They get straight up, they ignore me. I like hoping the thing will go away if they say nothing.
Yeah.
Or I get eye rolling or people leave the room. When I do it while they're in the car, it's just nothing. They don't leave the room, at least. They don't like just jump right out of the vehicle, which is nice. But usually it's just no response. And then if I press them on it, they say, I don't know that. I mentioned, because I had looked at this when we were back at our hotel before we left to come home.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, we're going to be going relatively near the world's fastest pop machine with no expectation that there was going to be any response, right?
Okay.
I was saying it basically just because I might as well say it.
Might as well.
It's my thing, right? I say it, no one responds.
They ignore you, right? Yeah. It's how the system keeps working.
I add that to the list, right? So it had, you know, we'd been driving already. It was raining the whole time we were driving. It was already dark. I mentioned this. And I'll mention things that, like, I'll say, ooh, I wonder what the answer to this is. I'll have three people in the car with their phones out, and none of them can look it up. Right?
Right.
And I have to say, if only someone had a pocket computer.
If only.
And then still really no one will look it up.
No.
So I say we're going to be near the world's fastest pop machine, which by far is one of the more unusual things I've ever suggested seeing when we're on a trip. And right away, Eileen says, oh, it's only like a 15-minute detour to get there. I was like, what? You looked this up? Immediately? And she's like, so here, we just want to turn up here in a quarter mile. And I'm like, okay, great. So we do that. And we're going down these like 1.5 lane roads. And it's pitch dark. The roads are wet. And it's not...
like a Woosley vacation now, isn't it?
It is. It is. It was a little spooky, right? You know? There's something about, you know, when you're from an urban area.
Yeah.
Total darkness is a little messed unnerving. Up, right?
Yeah.
Like I often, when we're driving, I'll go by, we'll be driving in the middle of nowhere, and then I'll see this one house in the middle of a farm field with like one light in the driveway, just kind of shining down there. And I'm like, how does someone live there without going insane?
Yeah.
Right? Or how many stories do you read about where, you know, it's the serial killer gets off the train, walks to the nearest house, kills everybody, gets back on the train.
Well, remember, when
right? Go ahead.
Yeah. When I first moved out to Lena, that was the thing. Like, I moved out there and I was in a house.
Yeah.
Surrounded by cornfields with a train track running behind it.
Yep.
And my nearest neighbor was a quarter mile away.
And you had a church and a cemetery right there.
And a church and a cemetery right there, yeah. So I had the cemetery, the train tracks, the cornfields, no neighbors. And I was by myself for the first time. And you'd be like, it's too dark out here. And it's silent out here. And then all of a sudden it's not silent. And that's even worse.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So sorry, back to, but yes.
No, and I remember when I stayed with you for a period of time that was not cool, man.
You remember that time I ran away from you and I hid in the cornfields? And I just left you there by yourself and I was hiding in the corn?
No, I don't remember that.
That didn't happen.
That could have happened, though, and I would have probably blocked that out. So we go down this road. We have to make, like, one turn. And one of the turns we have to make, there's, like, 20 emergency vehicles there.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, oh, great. It's, like, right in front of a house. We're like, this is super. And they let us go by. So I'm like, okay, here we go. And we go by, and we get to Lerna, Illinois.
Yeah. Is Lerna spelled L-E-R or L-U-R?
L-E-R-N-A.
Okay.
And it does have a post office, so perhaps this could be, we could revive
the post office. Yeah, there you go.
So Lerna is really just, it's a stretch of downtown, air quotes, and like a few houses and some commercial buildings, but most of them are empty. Yeah. All right. And we park across the street from what is, well, there's this empty, like, three-story building, like a warehouse-type building, brick building, and it's all overgrown and kind of tumble down. And then next to it is a somewhat better repair, small building. And that's where the world's fastest pop machine is.
Okay.
And it just sits in front of the building. Now, it's set back from the road, probably about 15 feet.
Okay.
And that 15 feet between the road and the building and the pop machine is filled with broken lawnmowers. So it's obviously like a small engine repair or a lawnmower repair shop or something, right?
Yeah. Well, one would hope.
So then that's what you're seeing. So, like, I took that picture from across the street, and we'll put that picture up on our socials using an emulator, and we will.
Oh, you're gonna fire up the virtual machine?
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
So, right. So what we see from across the street is it's dark, but there's that bright light from the panel at the top of the pop machine.
Yeah.
That's kind of illuminating this yard full of overgrown, like broken lawnmowers, riding mowers, regular lawnmowers, uh-huh. pieces of lawnmowers, with this one little path between them going straight to the pop machine.
I would. And then there's like
trees growing up out of the lawnmowers and everything, you know? So it's, and the kids were like, no.
No.
Do not want. That's a whole vista of nope right in front of us. So I couldn't get a picture that really captured that. Unfortunately, it did not come out, but. So we walk through there, get to the world's fastest pop machine, and it has a sign on it that says out of order.
That's the best payoff, by the way. So can I ask a couple of questions?
So I still put in the quarters just in case. But like I would put one in, put another one in, and then it goes down to the... you will probably have some recollection of what pop machines used to be like.
Yeah.
There's the little, I mean, it's still the little slot with the, where the coin comes out if it's not accepted for whatever reason. And the coin, you know, went down there and I started to reach in and I was like, I don't know if I want to reach in there. I don't know what's in there. What's living in here right now? Right? And Martin reaches in, gets it out. Try and put it in again. And it goes all the way down. The quarter comes out then where the pop is supposed to come out.
Oh, no.
So that's just like rusted through or something inside there, right?
Something's very wrong inside that machine.
I still tried it. We tried to press the, this is the type that had little panels.
Yeah.
Where you'd have like one of the cans actually in there that you could see.
Yeah.
And you would, so you're seeing what you're choosing. And those were all kind of busted up a little bit. Probably because people drove all the way to the middle of freaking nowhere and got there and it was out of order and there was pounding on the machine. Why? Right. So that's probably why those are broken. So it did not.
Or there's pure evil living inside of the machine and it broke the panels.
It's trying to get out. And I just fed it. It survives on silver coated nickel. And I have just given it a hearty meal.
So I have a question. Do we know...
Story's not over, but go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, continue.
So we do. I do. So I have some pictures of like the family in front of that pop machine.
Yeah. I would like those pictures.
So then, and Molly took a video because she wanted to have video evidence of the payoff of how fast it comes out. Because the legend of the machine is that you put the coins in, you press the button, and the pop is out, like, while your fingers are still on the button pressing it. Like, almost like the machine knows what you want. Which kind of maybe feeds into that being, you know, kind of
supernatural, mystical, terrifying. Yeah.
Right. Like, now a pop machine.
Yeah.
And for quite a while, you know, it takes forever for it to come out. You could put your hand down there and catch the pop if you wanted to break all your fingers.
It's true. Right?
But you're waiting for it. Here, you're not. Supposedly, you weren't even waiting for it. Now, almost certainly, that's just how pop machines used to be, right? They didn't care if the soda came down at, at Mach 4. Either burst open, or then when you opened it, covered you in corn syrup or whatever, right? So, whatever. This is your biggest thing to worry about in the 70s? No, thank you.
Yeah. No.
So, yeah, so she had recorded that and did not get a payoff for that. But so we get back in the car.
But she has found footage for like a horror movie now.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So then we go to turn around. I go up like a half street.
Yeah.
Turn around the intersection. Uh-huh. And Eileen says, well, is that it over there? Because Eileen is convinced... Eileen is convinced. So there were actually two pop machines in front of this, this store. One is the world's fastest. The other one was broken. That's how it's always been. Okay. Now they're both broken.
Oh, no.
And they're of identical vintage. All right.
Wow.
So I was like, no. She was like, well, is it someplace else? I'm like, no. I mean, this is it. These are old pop machines. This is it. This is the world's fastest pop machine. It's just broken. And so then we see, and she's like, is that it over there? And sure enough, so it's like a block over across the street and like a block over.
Yeah.
There's another incredibly old pop machine sitting out in front of a building.
How much soda are the people of Lerna, Illinois? Wait, no, Illinois? Indiana.
Illinois. Yeah, Illinois.
How much soda are these people drinking?
Well, how much soda were they drinking in the 60s? That's what I got, because that's when these pop machines were from.
What in the world?
So there were three of them in town. Three ancient pop machines.
In a town of, like, 17 people.
Right. And even, like, the broken one that's supposed to be the world's fastest one was still plugged in. The light is on. You can hear the cooler running. It's keeping something cool in there.
A body.
Well, it's kind of like in Ghostbusters, right? When you have... You don't want to shut down the grid, because that's when Zool will come back or whatever. I don't know. I don't remember exactly how that worked, but it was that terrible character actor who was always real smug, and he made him shut down the grid. But so we drive over to that one, and that one is in it's an open, well-lit space in front of a... I think also it was some sort of repair shop. And it's on. it's got all sorts of like, you know, don't kick the machine. It's got,
yeah,
there's words written in marker on it giving you instructions about the machine and what's in each of the, what each of your soda options is to choose from.
Yes.
So I'm like, all right. I'm like, I got to find 75 cents. So I managed to find another 75 cents. Because who has an endless supply of quarters anymore, right?
Correct.
Not me. Put in the 75 cents. It actually dispenses a soda fairly quickly. But there was like a, it took probably like a second or second and a half for the soda to come out.
Sure.
And the kids were like, whoa, that was fast. And I was like, well, that's not as fast as the world's fastest one was supposed to be. But sure, I guess that was fast. They're like, no, that was crazy. That was so fast. I'm like, okay, all right. And so then the soda was all sticky on the outside. It was weird. The can was all sticky.
Oh, the price you pay for fast soda.
Well, maybe that was like ectoplasm or something. Maybe it was... I'm guessing another soda in there had burst or something, right?
Yes.
And it sprayed all over it to mark its territory. Or something else it sprayed to mark its territory, now that I think correct about it. Yay. Inside, I press the button. A raccoon wakes up. Oh, pushes out the soda.
The world's fastest pop machine powered by the world's fastest raccoon.
That's why it wasn't like almost immediate, because the raccoon had to wake up.
That's right.
People don't usually come at like 8 o'clock at night in the winter when it's our, you know,
in the rain.
Dark. Right. He's thinking, I'm going to get a rest here.
That's right.
No, not from the Woosley family.
No rest for the weary.
So there, the family's thinking, is that now the world's fastest pop machine? And I was like, no, I don't think so.
Well,
and
it might be now.
And then the consensus was, it's not really all that fast. I don't know what, and, you know, we all determined then, well, what did we really expect from the world's fastest pop machine? And I think that's entirely the point, right?
Yeah.
This is like kind of the quintessential roadside attraction.
Indeed.
It's a specious claim about an unprovable thing.
Uh-huh. That that's highly irrelevant.
Exactly. Right. I was going to say, even if you could prove it, who cares? Highly irrelevant is exactly the right way to say that. So, yeah, so I still have that soda.
I'd wash that off if I were you.
That's why I didn't drink it then. But it was so cold that, like, my fingers touching it were like, you know, you feel like you're going to start to freeze to it.
Yeah, yeah.
It was ice cold, so it was very
days for you, man.
I was impressed by that. So now I have a plan in my head. Well, not a plan, just an idea. To say it's a plan would be overstating it, but my goal is to acquire the formerly world's fastest pop machine and restore it
to its former glory.
Yeah. And start my own roadside attraction of the world's fastest pop machine.
Yeah, but do you think they want to sell it? Because I think they want to keep that luster.
I think they're dead. I think whoever owned it is dead. I think that's what's happened.
But I think the people of Lerna, Illinois are going to listen to this podcast, and they're going to say, we're still on the map. It's still a thing. So I think what you're so you could hear me out.
I'm hearing you.
You could. That's good. That's good, because that's how we know that we're still talking to each other. You could make the decision to buy the world's fastest pop machine and restore it, or you could buy one of the other two pop machines that you found in that town and do what you need to do to make it faster.
It's not like the $6 million man.
Isn't it, though? Surely. Remember when we were children and we had Pinewood Derby race cars. And the first year I made mine, did it all by myself. I was so proud. Basically shaved a little bit of wood off of it in haphazard angles and then painted it poorly. Mm-hmm. And then put the wheels on it. And then it
was silver, black, and
yellow,
if I remember correctly.
Terrible, yeah. And then it you know, uncertainly rolled down the track.
That's a metaphor for our lives.
Really setting the stage for the next four decades. Mm-hmm. And Dad's decision then was, well, next year what we're going to do is we're going to refine this. That's what he did. He mm-hmm. took that hunk and he just like shaped, right? And he made yep. the fastest car. So, yep. which is probably up in their attic somewhere.
No, you know how he has all those, you know, 120 scale car models?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's been with all those.
Really?
All of our old Pinewood Derby cars are in there.
Does he even my old shitty one?
Yeah.
Wow. That makes
old
me
shitty
good.
Is in there.
I gotta say,
OL apostrophe shitty.
I was surprised at the time when the scout leader called it old shitty.
Here like, comes old shitty.
It's like, dude, I'm right here. I'm a small child. But he did. Anyway.
70s.
70s were a wild time. If you weren't there, you wouldn't believe it.
No. No, you really wouldn't. I don't believe it.
So... I really think this is the key. You get inside there, you open up the machine, and you figure out there are some levers that need to be, you know, re-greased, or maybe you have the rust scraped off them or something. You can shave a few precious milliseconds off of its delivery time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, hey, I have the world's fastest pop machine now. Suck it, Lerna.
Yeah, so I should just do that with some other, or maybe you were suggesting acquiring one of those other two. But maybe I should just acquire one just from anywhere.
Yeah, I think you could do that. I feel like taking one of Lerna's other pop machines and making it the fastest has sort of a romantic like arc to it.
Here's the thing. Or a thing. Here's a thing.
Yeah.
Two of those three are owned by the same person, I'm assuming, because they're next to each other.
Sure.
If the person isn't going to give up one of them, I doubt he or she is giving up the other one.
Hmm. Fair enough. Well, you're going to execute your plan and your path to fame, however you see fit.
I am going to find the oldest pop machine I can.
And make maybe it the not fastest even spot machine you can.
Yeah, maybe not even fix it up or anything. You know, clean it, but not yeah. fix it up. Make it so that when someone gets close to it, after they insert quarters, okay,
yeah,
that triggers like a proximity sensor that immediately spits a soda out.
Yeah, I like it.
So then it is like they're not even having to make a choice. That just by putting money in, you've made a choice. You have.
Is there a way that you could?
You have submitted to the machine.
That's right. Is there a way that you could maybe like apply AI to this situation, where like an artificial intelligence can see the person come up and run its algorithm and figure out what sort of pop it believes that person wants. And just as they put the coins in, boom, the soda's out.
That's a lot of data that we don't have yet.
I bet that Big Soda has that data.
Do you think they're going to give it to me?
No, but I think you can take it. Oh, I feel a heist coming on, man. I'm excited. All right. Well, that was pretty cool. I got to tell you, I'm serious. That photo, though, that straight up looks like the poster, like the movie poster for a Japanese horror movie.
Yeah, it does look like we were approaching a murder factory.
It's wild.
So, at least I got that out of the whole situation. Dude, there.
That was... You got a lot there. That was pretty cool. I think that you need to turn your thinking around here and say, I had a pretty spectacular holiday. Because I had that experience.
I did have a spectacular holiday.
There you go.
All right.
Well, I'm going to pivot us. Because there was a reason we decided we needed to get together as soon as possible again. In the last podcast, was we were talking about the year 1983?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
Yep, 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 yep. 40 years ago.
Yeah, it is now. It wasn't when we did it. It was a mere 39 years ago.
But no.
But time has passed as it does. And you talked about your fondness for a musician who you surprised me, to be very honest. And I thought we need to give you some time. I need to really clear out and let you isolate on the magic of Bob Seger.
You know,
so are you
I
ready
think,
to do that?
So I did try and do some more Seger research.
Yeah.
It was incomplete. But I think you're overstating it when you say that I have an opinion
okay.
of substance on Bob Seger.
Fair enough. Overstatement is what makes the podcast industry, by the way. So,
well, fair enough then. All right. Let's roll with it then. I love Bob Seger. Yeah. That's all I got. I don't know.
By the way, in saying roll with it, you've also invoked one of the least high quality of Steve Winwood songs.
Yeah, although we have just told a story about some of the night moves that I was making.
You were making night moves. Oh, that would be so great to like have Molly's video and just be playing night moves under that.
Night. So here's what so Bob Seger as some will know is a musician.
Yeah.
From Detroit who started in the 60s, started his musical career in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And sometime around the late 70s became fairly popular, right?
Absolutely.
Popular enough that even then into the 80s, he was doing some movie soundtrack songs. And some say that his live album, Bullet Live or whatever it is, I don't know,
okay.
might be the greatest live album ever.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but... Me, I have never intentionally listened to a Bob Seger song. I've never made the choice to put it on. Okay.
Okay.
I've intentionally not turned off the radio when a Bob Seger song comes on, but that's about it.
Okay.
But I find Bob Seger interesting because he just seems like a guy, right?
Okay.
That's what we were talking about. That some of the in the last episode, you know, how what makes some people appealing is just their everyday qualities.
Sure.
Right? Like Phil Collins just seems like a regular guy.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I don't know which newer musicians we could talk about and say they just seem like regular folk. But,
well, one of the hardest things about newer music, and I want to be very clear, as I say this, I'm going to sound like old man. I'm fully owning that.
Sure.
Is that so many new musicians have taken on these wild and weird, like, musical names.
Right, or personas, right? So it's all...
Right. Makes it very hard to say, you know, Lil Uzi Vert seems like a regular guy. Now, Lil Uzi Vert might be a regular guy, but he doesn't sound like a regular guy.
Right. A lot of, I think fame or celebrity is much more a component of being a star now than it used to be.
Yeah. Here's another example. Justin Vernon would sound like a regular guy, right?
Yeah.
Bon Iver does not sound like a regular guy.
No.
But Bon Iver is Justin Vernon.
Right.
So this is our challenge, because Bob Seger just has a name that sounds like a regular guy.
Right, and even the music just has an accessibility to it, right?
Sure.
Right, and then like my kids listen to some of these people, and I don't know any of their names. I mean, I know my kids' names, but I don't know the names of any of the musicians.
Good on you, by the way.
And like every song seems like it's about like anxiety.
Yeah.
And that's not really kind of an accessible sort of thing either. I can appreciate the fact that we can talk about that a bit more openly.
Sure.
But even like in the way they're doing it, it's all still has a certain amount of artifice to it.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that it doesn't. It's like, to me, as someone who has dealt for a very long time with anxiety, it doesn't feel like empowering, right? Like mm-hmm. there's some music where you say, ah, that represents me, and I feel like I'm heard. It gives me another way of thinking about or describing how I feel.
Yeah.
That's not how any of these songs make me feel as a person with anxiety.
Right.
But even like that element where like maybe even just through the content or the nature of your art, you could come across as accessible. That's just not as much a part of how things work right now.
Yeah.
It is what it is. It's fine.
Sure.
You know, I mean, this world's a mess right now. I can understand if there's a certain degree to which people have a hard time looking at it straight on.
Yeah, I get it.
So, but so the thing that I remember that I found most interesting about Bob Seger was that he's one of the musicians that at least at one point had made the very conscious choice to essentially let his music go like out of publication.
Okay.
Not so much in the sense like he still would have it available as records and CDs and such, but more so he wasn't putting it on any streaming services. Now that may have changed by now, but at the time that I learned about this, that was his choice. And he said because the model didn't work. And there's a very large degree to which that's been borne out to be true, right? Right. That your music being available on a streaming service is not making you money.
Right.
But I then, the story I listened to was on NPR. It talked about how while you're not making the money from the direct streaming, what you're losing out on is the accessibility, in a different sense, the accessibility of people knowing who the hell you are.
Sure.
And it ran through this whole series of kind of a, you know, graphical analysis of, you know, up until a certain point, Bob Seger's music was being played on the radio, like just as much as like Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
All right. And then around the time that streaming services came in, and then Bob Seger was no longer available on the streaming services, his radio airplay went away.
Okay.
Because I think those streaming services were in a lot of ways also driving the radio airplay.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
There was a feedback loop there, I think, right? So,
right.
And continuing on that trend, then his record sales were actually going down, even compared to where they had been previously.
Sure.
And the article talked about how the risk was that he would, whereas he had been a relevant act, at least in the sense that, in the classic rock sense, he was a relevant mm-hmm. act.
Yep.
That he was losing his relevance. And he would just become kind of a nostalgia sort of thing. So even if he ended up on streaming services later on, when the model became more productive for artists in a direct financial sense, by that point, the audience wouldn't be there anymore.
Yeah, that's an interesting, like the idea that in order to maintain that relevance, you would have to, even having previously been relevant, but to sort of stay in the public eye, you would have to sort of kowtow to this thing that doesn't necessarily make you money and doesn't really benefit the artist.
Right. And, you know, there's a lot that's been made about how these streaming services, Spotify, Apple Music,
mm-hmm. yep.
being the primary ones, pay virtually nothing per stream.
Yeah.
But that's where most people get their music now.
Absolutely.
And the reality is radio, which was where people used to get their music then, didn't really pay anything either.
Right.
I think
no, that's true. You didn't,
there's a certain yeah. recency bias in the sense that, maybe it's not called a recency bias then, but that you know, the abuses of radio became accepted and understood. And then once another model came in that was a little scary because it was new, that had the yeah. same problems, it was getting a bit more of a hard look than the previous model did.
Sure.
And it's a fair hard look. I don't ever want to say, I don't want to come out on the side saying that, see, artists should just accept getting nothing for their music. They should have gotten more for their music when it was played on the radio, and they should get more for their music when it's on a streaming service. Right?
Right.
But the streaming service is not, in a functional sense, a whole lot different than the radio.
Well, I do think there's one important difference. And it is, I think I hadn't actually thought about the point you just made, that the streaming service replaces radio, and radio also was not really a moneymaker for artists. But the difference is that if I have a streaming service, again, unless you're talking about like the older streaming service, and maybe they're still around.
I know what you're going to say, and I agree, I think.
But like, if I have a streaming service, I no longer need to buy the album.
Right. And the record,
so if I want
right,
to hear
the radio
something,
drove you to buying a record.
Right. Because your other option was you just had to like wait. You were at the whims of the radio, right? You
exactly.
would get to hear that song when the radio decided you got to hear the song. And I want to be very clear for our listeners who are younger and don't understand this. The radio is like a magical box that mm-hmm. had its own personality. And so you would buy your radio and you would shop for like the different kinds of personality and hoping that it would give you the right songs. Have I properly explained radio for the younger listeners? Think that's going to make sense for them?
This is DJ Night Smooth. You've totally captured that experience right there.
Thanks, DJ Night Smooth.
All right.
Appreciate that. All right.
Stay sexy.
It's my only option. So, but that's the trick, is that you would get introduced to it on the radio, and then if you liked it enough, you'd go buy a copy so that you had your own to listen to it when you wanted to listen. Whereas now, the streaming service is both your introduction model and your on-demand model.
Yeah, because you can download it.
Right.
Right to your account. You can listen to it anytime you choose.
Right.
And so there isn't, right, you're exactly right. There's no impetus to buy the digital file.
Yeah.
Or the album or any of those other things because you have it whenever you want it.
I actually started to realize, like last year, this was one of the things that came up, maybe it was even the year before, I started to recognize that. I realized, I'm like, okay, I'm paying whatever, $10 or $15 a month to a streaming service. I'm listening to all this music. I'm learning new stuff. I'm finding stuff from bands that I like. I'm finding stuff that is coming out now or stuff that I missed the first time around. But I'm not buying any of it. Mm-hmm. And I realized I wanted to start actually doing that, as dorky as that might seem to some people, but like to actually, when I find something new, go ahead and buy it as support to the artist, knowing that still the artist doesn't necessarily make enough, but the artist makes more than nothing, which is
right,
pretty close to what they're making if I listen to it on Spotify or Apple Music.
Mm-hmm.
And even better if you can buy it like directly from the artist. I think that then it they make a little more even then. So
yeah, you know, and I have that straight from an artist's mouth. I went and saw Eric Bachman, who is the lead singer from Archers of Loaf.
Yeah.
If you may recall that band.
I do. Actually, he did a house party here in or a house show here in Santa Cruz recently.
Yes, and shortly after that, he was then in Illinois, and I was invited to see that living room show or whatever you'd want to call it. Yeah. And so afterwards, I bought a couple of his records, and he, you know, we were just chatting briefly, and he mentioned how much, you know, I was like, well, I've thought about going online and ordering some of these or, you know, see if I can find them in a record store. And I'm like, well, I said, you know, so much better now that I can just buy them directly from you. And he was like, you don't even know the half of it. He's like, I make so much more money by you just handing me the money for the record now than I get even if you were to go and buy it from my record label, or then right, even more so than if you go and buy it from a record store.
Sure.
So, yeah, there's a definite appreciation that they have for that. And so, you know, like I don't think of going to a concert, like a large show, and buying music there, which you wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't go and see, you know, like I've taken the boy to see Imagine Dragons, or we took the girl to see AJR, you know, and you would not buy the record or the music there at a show like of that size.
Sure.
But I do recall a lot of the shows that I went to as a younger person, you know, buying records, singles, whatever, from them, from the bands at the shows. So,
yeah. Well, that's the thing that I started doing too. When I've started going to some shows this year, I picked up a bunch of stuff in Bob Mould's discography that I didn't have when I saw him. And actually, H.R. McIntyre, who was his opening act, who was great. If you haven't heard, actually, I'll throw that out there as a little reco. I think that's how the cool kids say recommendation now. They say reco. So, is that correct? I got that? I'm so stupid and old. Anyway, H.R. McIntyre's really, really good.
Cool. Yeah, Recco. Thanks for the Recco.
Anyway.
I've heard that people start in making reservations, they refer to it as a res.
Yeah. Yeah, but that always confuses me, because then I don't know if I'm going to find Native Americans there.
Well, right. To me, that just ends up being a little offensive, because there's some words you just wouldn't use, right?
Right. I'm not going to... That's just, that is foul that you did that, because now my brain is just filling up with variants that I know.
Like, you wouldn't send your kid with ADHD to a concentration camp, all right?
You just steal that bit from somebody?
No, I came up with that myself, and I feel bad about it.
It's very true, though. You wouldn't do that. They would call it something else.
But you need, yeah, right. You need to be aware of the words that you're using. Mm-hmm. And I think the reservation should be a word that we kind of almost look at like concentration camp.
Yeah.
It's not functionally a lot different. No. You know, and if natives want to refer to where they live as on the res, mm-hmm. that is them taking, you know, kind of doing that whole Yankee Doodle Dandy sort of thing, taking yep. some power from the insult or from the pain.
Yeah.
And I think they're entitled to do that. I'm not. So just like, you know, there's just certain phrases you wouldn't use or certain symbols or whatever that you just don't use because of the connotation. And we just all agree, maybe it's a shame that we can't do that, but, you know, other yeah. people have feelings, and maybe it's not so bad to consider them. That does not make me a woke cuck snowflake.
No. Other things make you a woke cuck snowflake, but not that.
Yes.
There are prices. Essentially, what you're saying is there are prices to pay for living in a society.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I got a question for you here, and this is taking us off topic. You said H.R. Right. McIntyre?
Yeah.
So I didn't know who H.R. McIntyre was, so I was looking him up here on my phone.
Well, it's a she.
Looking them up yes. here on my phone. The first thing that comes up, H.R. McIntyre, Wiki. H.R. Mm-hmm. McIntyre was the president of the Circinus Federation from 3032 until his death in the late 3067. That's the Google response I'm getting. That's the first one for H.R. McIntyre.
Okay, well, I'm going to check now because maybe I've got the initials wrong here. But that's a guy who's going to live in the future? What?
That is correct. I believe it's probably a wiki for a game, but that's the first one that comes up.
Well, that would be part of the problem. It's H.C. McIntyre. My apologies to H.C. McIntyre, because honestly, she was great. She's also known at times as Heather McIntyre. She's a member of the band Mount Moriah. Yeah, it was just great stuff. Very southern. It's actually not terribly off the Bob Seger track. Not anything like his music, but he's very like northern industrial roots music, you know? And mm-hmm. Her stuff is very southern roots. Really, really nice. So H.C. McIntyre. And that McIntyre is spelled M.C. I just lost the spelling. M.C.E.N.T.I.R.E. H.C. McIntyre. That's my recommenda for you. Still trying to find other abbreviations that work well.
That's
going to workshop them. All right. You know, last thing I'm going to say about, I appreciate you you bringing these thoughts about Bob Seger. And it turns out a lot of his discography is not still on streaming services. It looks like Spotify has more than Apple Music, but I don't think either of them has everything. So I'm not entirely sure why that is, but that maybe that he decided to put enough out there to, you know, keep himself in the game, as it were.
Right.
But last confession I have is, in my brain, Bob Seger and Steve Miller are like, they sit like right next to each other. But I do think that in terms of their personalities and their regular guyness, they're wildly different from each other.
Okay. Yeah, probably. I would think that that's...
Because Steve Miller, from what I have heard, again, I've not met Steve Miller. And Steve, if I've got this wrong, please get in touch with us. We'll get you on the podcast here. We can talk about it. We're always the podcast that's willing to have people come on and talk if we have we've aggrieved them in some way. Nobody's ever taken us up on it, so I think that means we've gotten everything right.
Silence always is. Well, what's yeah. There's a phrase. There's a very well-known phrase. Silence is. It's not silence of acceptance, but silence is
consent. But yeah, that seems dangerous. That seems
No! Don't say that.
I'm getting into really other bad territory there. No. So anyway, like, I've read things about Steve Miller that he seems to be a bit more pretentious and a bit more of a, less of a regular guy. Let's just say that. Anyway, that's all. Thank you for leading us down the silver bullet path.
You bet. Would you like some Bob Seger fun facts to wrap this up?
Yeah, give me three. Give me three Bob Seger fun facts.
Oh my, there's more than three that are good.
Oh, you got to pick the three best ones. All killer, no filler. That's what this podcast's motto is.
That's clearly not true.
As we move into hour two of this, whatever this is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
So, okay. Bob Seger, as a young man, as teenagers and thereafter,
yeah,
is great friends with Glenn Frey of the Eagles.
Oh, wow.
Long before either of them were famous, they were friends.
That's pretty amazing.
And Bob Seger's only number one song, Shakedown, from, I think, the Beverly Hills Cop
soundtrack. Yeah. There we go.
Was supposed to be recorded by Glenn Frey.
Uh-huh.
Glenn Frey got laryngitis, so he called up Bob Seger and said, "Hey, man, can you do this for me instead?"
Did he say that? Because he had laryngitis.
Oh, dear.
Or did he have someone say it for him?
He probably talked to his producer through a note, said, "Here's my reco to have Bob Seger fill in for me," and probably the producer called.
I have a recommend for who can do this while I'm out. But what's a recommend? Recommend, you know.
That is, you have the best Glenn Frey with laryngitis impersonation I've ever heard.
I'm trying to kind of nail down the market. Do you think people will travel to see that, like the world's fastest pop machine?
No. Because, you know, here's the thing, though. They would have to interact with you.
City. See, I can't sing it. I can't do anything right now. I got to recommend for you. Sorry. Back to what you were saying. Glenn, that's pretty interesting. So were they both from Detroit?
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah. So they've been lifelong friends then. Let's see. The record label. So yeah. Bob Seger ended up signing with Capitol Records when he first signed a record label deal.
Sure.
But the label that actually pursued him harder, offered him more money, was hometown label Motown.
I thought that's what you were going to say. Wow. That's interesting.
he just didn't figure that they he fit in as well with the rest of the Motown vibe.
Uh-huh.
And so he went with
Did Capitol he have Records. Any concerns that they didn't know he was white?
Have you seen him?
Well, but maybe they hadn't seen him. Have you seen, I don't know if you've seen this, it's been making the rounds on my Twitter at least recently.
Oh yeah, about
Frankie Lyman? Yeah. That video is chilling.
I'll admit I didn't know that Frankie Lyman was African American.
I knew that, but watching these girls like and again, assuming this is not doctored, the whole shot makes you think that these girls are like, I like this music, but he's black.
What? Yeah.
Or saying it, probably not saying he's black, in their heads. And then when they realized that they were on camera, the looks on their faces would be like, quit looking at me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was, right. Even like the best looks were like confusion and the worst were like,
revulsion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm just wondering if like Berry Gordy Jr. just heard Bob Seger and didn't know that he was white. Thought for another time. We'll here's what we'll do. We'll get Berry Gordy on the podcast future episode. We'll ask him.
Is he alive?
I think somebody named Berry Gordy is alive.
That'll do. That'll do.
All right. You got one more fun fact?
I do actually have two I'm trying to decide between.
Oh, fine. Give me both of them. Live a life of excess.
In high school, he could run a 5-minute mile.
Wow. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
I got to be honest. When I see pictures of him from the 70s, he doesn't look like a runner to me.
No, but... No, I got... See, and I'm just going to blow right past you here. There's a local classic rock station in Detroit on his birthday, which is May 6th. They call it Seger de Mayo. And in the morning, they only play Bob Seger music.
Wait, only in the morning?
Well.
That's a shame.
They save the evening for the night. I don't know. That was a joke. It wasn't even good.
Nice.
He has... twice won the prestigious Port Huron to Mackinac boat race.
Wow.
Sailboat race. Yes. He's an award-winning sailboat captain.
Wow. I got to be honest. When you started that, saying he twice won, I was, and this is just how strange my brain is, I was reading something about PJ Harvey recently and about how she was the first person to win the Mercury Prize twice. And when he said twice won, my first thought was, is there a prize for Detroit musicians? Which you could also call the Mercury Prize.
You could.
Or the Pontiac.
Oh, boy.
Pontiac Award. You know, you could call it any of these things. Sorry. Okay.
So the last one I'm going to give you.
Yeah.
Is that even up until the mid 70s, he was more of like a regional star. And by regional, really just like Michigan.
Yeah.
Because as late as like June of 76, he was playing shows. So in Chicago, he played a show for 50 people in a bar. 3 days later, he played a show in front of 80,000 people in the Pontiac Silverdome.
That's great. That's pretty spectacular.
Now, this fact, I've seen this twice presented this way. It may end up being something where he decided just to do a little secret show in Chicago and that he wasn't the headliner in Michigan.
Uh-huh.
You know, it might be that there's some fudging of the facts there, but... As stated, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it is. And but that idea of being like a regional star is, I think that's another thing that I don't know if it happens as much in the same way anymore.
I don't know that it does. And I don't think it has for a while. I don't think like in our lifetimes, even as much that that's been a thing.
Right.
Like our adult lifetimes.
Yeah. That's a fair point.
Which is now several decades.
No, oh, it's a lot of decades. Yeah, it's upsetting when I meet people who are adults and complaining about how they're starting to feel old, and I realize that I was an adult when they were born. That's a hard pill to swallow, and I swallow a lot of pills.
What? Oh, ding dong. What kind of music do you think Bob Seger listens to?
I'm thinking like LCD Sound System. No?
What do you really think he listens to? Take me seriously here for once.
Okay, what do I think he really listens to? Well, I mean, I think that at some point in his life, he must have listened to a boatload of, like, blues and blues rock and, like, R&B and stuff like that.
Yes, early on. Groups like the first record he ever bought was
Little Richard. Everybody was like, I don't mean to say that like dismissively, but like so many different genres you hear people say Little Richard was what like turned the lights on. But I would imagine he'd be one of them.
People like Wilson Pickett and such.
Oh, yeah.
His first record he ever bought was Come Go With Me by the Del Vikings.
Sure.
You know that song, right?
I do. I'm not going to sing it right now because I have Glenn Frey laryngitis.
Fryingitis.
Oh, boy.
But he has said that three of his favorite musicians are Leonard Cohen, Tom Waits, and Joni Mitchell.
Wow. Who are wildly different from his style.
Yes.
That's pretty cool. Well, I guess that's another interesting thing. I've kind of wondered about that. Like, I don't know how many times people who make music in one genre, like, that's the music they like to listen to.
Right.
You know? But that's just how the music comes out of them.
Right. Right. Like, he, on one of his more recent albums, covered California Stars, which was that Woody Guthrie song.
Oh, sure.
That Wilco and Billy Bragg did
mm-hmm.
on that Mermaid Avenue, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. All right.
So anyway, I may actually intentionally listen to some Bob Seger now just to see what the hell is going on with that. But
make it happen.
This has been Seger Chat.
This has been Seger Chat. All right, let's... let's finish with real quickly. I want to ask you, because we are right here at the dawn of 2023, the year of our Lord.
Mm-hmm.
You got any big predictions? They could be of any scope at all. Personal, professional, geopolitical, anything. What's going to happen this year?
Oh my gosh. Do you have any in mind? I mean, I think it'd probably be like the hot prediction would be that Russia will experience a financial collapse. Or that there will be a new pandemic. Or...
those are hot and exciting. Both of those.
I think a president or former president will die this year.
Oh, okay. I could see that. We got some old ones.
That we do.
I'll make a prediction then that as we start to look forward to the next election cycle, Gen Xers will still not be taken seriously.
It's not a prediction.
It is.
Foregone conclusion.
Okay, I'll do that, and I will say I believe that our beloved baseball team, the Chicago Cubs, are going to have a better than 500 record this year.
Okay, I like that one.
I think they start to move toward contention and possibly all the way into contention.
I say that finally a snarky meme will take down a government or cause effective actual social change.
Oh, it's going to happen. This is the year.
This is the year
that snarky memes are going to
snarky meme will actually be real protest, real activism.
Be a real change maker. All right, that's bold.
I'm an activist. I like to call myself a bit of an activist. I like to make memes.
There you go.
And financially support the systems that I seek to undermine with my memes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my political platform is Giphy.
I'm a bit of a revolutionary, if you haven't noticed.
All right, last prediction I'm going to make is...
Bait me like one of your revolutionary girls.
Did you say, because you were whispering, I couldn't tell if you said paint me or bait me.
Either way. Work. Yeah. Baste me like one of your revolutionary girls. I don't know.
I have a strict no basting policy. Anyway, finally, I'm going to predict that for no apparent reason, cassettes continue to make a resurgence as a hipster way to listen to music.
Yeah,
there's a reason for vinyl. It could be good. It could be bad. There's not a reason for cassettes.
There is. Cassettes are inexpensive to make.
Okay.
And they're very durable.
Yeah.
And they're reusable.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I would say even more so than vinyl, cassettes are a very democratic way of being able to release music.
Okay.
Now, nobody has the freaking infrastructure to play them.
Right.
So they just sit around. That's right. That's just the ironic owning a cassette, and you open it up so that you have the download code inside, right? But cassettes actually would serve a purpose in the marketplace if there was not a streaming services, right?
Right. Like, I guess that's what I'm saying. I mean, you could actually, like, even beyond discussions about whether or not vinyl sounds different or better, and I'm not going to bother. you could say, like, with vinyl, there are things about album art, there are and being able to see that better, and there are some pieces, there are some aesthetic elements you could appreciate. I grew up on cassettes, but I'm just like, yeah, I don't know what they give us, other than, like, beyond what, like, a streaming platform gives you.
Right.
And yet...
Because you can make a playlist. You can make a mixtape just via a playlist and pass that on to people.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here, I could make it stupider. Okay. Because if we can say there is some value to the cassette tape, can we agree that if the hipsters decide to push a resurgence of 8-tracks, then it's time to burn it all down?
Yeah, that's a non-starter. Right. Or the reel-to-reel or whatever.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Kevin.
Yeah?
You know, the other thing we were going to do is we were going to count down the 10 best episodes of our podcast from 2022.
All right. Number 2 was our last one.
Uh-huh.
And number 1 is the one before that.
Yeah. I agree. Okay. So we have consensus. Nice. All right. Well, I'm going to let you go. I'm also going to let me go.
All right.
And I'm going to say to the fair listener, thanks for listening. If you made it this far, may God have mercy on your soul.
Right.
And again, smash that like button. Check us out on Instagram, where Kevin's going to post pictures of the haunted pop machine.
I will. I will. And yeah, we love you so much, and we will talk to you next time.
Indeed.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye for now.